It's the third and final hour of the 9 till noon show, and you're very welcome back. It's time for our Wellness Wednesday feature. And as part of Wellness Wednesday, this morning we're speaking to Dr. Sheila Gilhinney, who is the CEO of Alcohol Action Ireland. And Sheila joins us on Zoom. And Sheila, you are very welcome indeed to the programme this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Donald. Very pleased to be on.
This is Men's Health Week, and Alcohol Action Ireland are urging men to know their numbers around alcohol. The Know Your Numbers campaign, it was quite big many years ago. The sort of focus went off it a bit. Is this a focus we need to sort of re-look at?
Actually, the whole of the Men's Week campaign has been about numbers and different aspects to that. And one of the things that we have been looking at in particular is a number which the HSE would say. So this is the number for what they would call the low risk drinking guidelines. And they would say that men should have no more than 17 standard drinks in a week and should allow 2 or 3 days that would be absolutely alcohol free. And that's a lower risk drink guideline. It's not saying that there's no risk. It's just saying it's a lower risk. And what they mean by a standard drink is a half pint of beer, or a pub measure of spirits, or a small glass of wine, say about 100 millilitres. So, you know, 17 standard drinks in a week, it actually adds up quite quickly if you think that really a pint is two standard drinks straight away. So, but those are important numbers, you know, to have, because like we live in a society that's, it's very alcoholic, you know, like a lot of us who drink would do so in ways that are actually very risky and indeed. And we know we have some other kind of scary numbers out there where we actually have high levels of binge drinking. We're the 8th highest in the OECD countries for binge drinking. So this campaign this week as part of Men's Health is kind of asking people to sort of step back a little bit and, you know, take a check on where you might be at in relation to alcohol, because it's a feature of our health. It's, you know, drinking really, really does impact our health, whether we're talking about physical health in terms of things like liver disease, heart disease, cancer, or whether we're talking about, you know, our mental health. It actually has a huge impact. Alcohol would have a massive impact on our mental health. So we could be talking about depression, anxiety. A lot of men don't necessarily use those words, you know, but would know themselves that they're maybe not feeling the best in themselves. And alcohol and looking at your alcohol intake actually could be do something there just to help improve matters.
The cancer one is an interesting one in to the extent that we know, say, tobacco is a carcinogen, and there's been a very, very successful campaign over years highlighting and stressing the carcinogenic impact of tobacco, and tobacco has become by and large eschewed by society, and it's become something of a taboo, and its use has reduced dramatically in recent years because of that awareness of it being a carcinogen. I suspect if you asked a sample 100 people, is alcohol a carcinogen? If you ask them that distinct, direct question, I'm not sure how many people would say yes.
Well, in fact, actually, there has been surveys done on this, and, you know, it's about 20% of people would know that it is a carcinogen. It's actually in the same, it's what they call a class one carcinogen. It's in the same category as tobacco or asbestos. And you know, there is actually legislation coming that'll put a label on every alcohol product sold, which will actually give you that information that it is a carcinogen, because precisely that, we don't really know it. We do know that there are about 1,000 cases of cancer that are diagnosed every year that are directly related to alcohol. And about 2/3 of those would actually occur in men. You know, so it's a thing just to be aware of and to kind of, you can really improve your health. And, you know, for a lot of people, part of their health is actually, you know, taking steps so that they don't get sick in the first place. It's not about actually, you know, oh, you're sick, now do this. This is about actually trying to keep you healthy in the first place. So a lot of people would have concerns about cancer. They have concerns about heart disease. They have, you know, concerns about their mental health. And a big step towards improving all of those, you know, or reducing the worries about that is to reduce alcohol use.
One of the interesting figures that's published in conjunction with Men's Health Week and the focus on alcohol, is that alcohol is a causal factor in more than 200 disease and injury conditions, according to the World Health Organization. Now, people will say, yeah, alcohol is a causal factor, but there's many other causal factors and it's not the main causal factor. However, just underneath is one that I have to say jumped up at me, that says in 2021, the most recent statistics available, 18,877 people were hospitalised in Ireland due to wholly alcohol-related conditions. Now, I presume that would encroach into things like assaults and public order and things like that, that would have an alcohol sort of raison d'etre behind them, as well as weekends and so on. And we know that our emergency departments can be absolutely crowded with the impact of alcohol-fueled incidents. Or are you saying that's just disease? That's
actually
not taking into effect?
That figure, nearly 19,000, is actually illnesses. It's not.
So that's not taking into effect an emergency department on a Saturday night.
Like the falls or assaults or things like that. So that's separate again. Actually, in EDs, you'd find upwards of about a third of ED presentations at weekends would be related to alcohol. So we already know that there is a heavy burden there. But that 19,000 figure is actually to do with illnesses, liver disease being unfortunately a large one there, that impacts very severely on men's health.
There's been a clear drive to try to highlight this, and part of it started, and let's maybe blow our own trumpet a bit. Part of it started up here with the Northwest Alcohol Forum some years ago, that maybe was blazing the trail to a certain extent for some of the work that's being done now. People like Dennis Bradley and others who were involved in that way back, and that started 10, 12 years ago, if not more. But since then, is there any evidence that the message is getting through? Is there any evidence that the alcohol-related harm message is actually being absorbed and we're seeing any of these figures actually fall?
Well, one of the things that actually it really does hearten me is that we can see that actually the level of consumption of alcohol has fallen. So it's gone down by about 10% since 2018. That was 2018 was the year when the Public Health Alcohol Act was passed, and it has a whole series of measures that includes things like minimum pricing, restrictions in advertising, things like putting alcohol in supermarkets in a specific location, and in structural separation. All small steps, none of them actually earth shattering, but it is good to see that there has been an improvement, say a 10% drop in alcohol consumption, and we do see some improvements. So even though those numbers for attending hospital and there are very high, actually as a proportion of the population it has been reducing slightly, so there's a little bit of an improvement. But there's a long way to go. So when I was saying there that, we're drinking about 10% less than we were back in 2018, if we were all sticking to the HSE lower risk drinking guidelines, we'd actually be drinking 40% less than what we're currently drinking. So there's some progress, but there's still a long way to go on this.
I suspect a lot of people, when they talk about a unit of alcohol, would assume a unit of alcohol is a pint. So immediately you're effectively doubling what it is, because the unit is half a pint. I also strongly suspect that if someone pours themselves a glass of wine or a shot at home, it's going to be substantially larger than a standard pub measure.
Absolutely. It's funny, actually, that particular thing about, a glass of wine being 100 millilitres. When you pour that out, a lot of people say that looks like an egg cup. It looks very small. And that's partly, actually, literally our wine glasses have turned into goblets. They're huge than where they were. If you go back and you look at, the size of wine glasses back in the 1950s, 60s, you were looking at, wedding gifts or whatever at that stage, you would see the wine glasses were much, much smaller at that time. So, again, coming back to knowing your numbers, actually knowing the size of what a standard drink looks like, knowing the size of, say a measure of spirits, is a very important thing to do, because if you just free pour something out, sure, we're all the same. You just fill things up. You fill up, the glass to full, whereas that's maybe two or three measures perhaps are actually within it.
Maybe the big difference between alcohol and tobacco that we referenced earlier is that in the case of tobacco, the message is quite clear. Don't do it. Don't smoke. Don't consume tobacco in any way, shape or form, because if you do, you are in immediate danger of having your life altered and potentially prematurely ended. With alcohol, it's not quite so simple, because you're not saying don't do it. You're saying drink in moderation. You're saying be aware of your numbers. You're saying it's fine to have a drink every now and again, but just know what the limits are and realise that the limits are perhaps a lot more stringent than you might have thought. That gives you I won't say a difficulty, but it gives you a challenge in terms of trying to bring people to a point where they can accept the limitations and accept the boundaries as you would like them to be seen, because people in their own minds will have boundaries and say, oh no, I'm grand, I can do X, I can do Y, I can, as the old phrase used to be, ah, he's a great fella, he can take his drink.
I think, you know, realistically, nobody is saying prohibition, because prohibition, we know, just simply doesn't work. But actually, over the last number of years, and the World Health Organization is very clear on this, they would say that there's no level of alcohol that is safe. You know, so that's actually moving more towards what you would be saying, like about tobacco. They would say that there's literally no safe level of alcohol consumption. I think one of the other big differences between tobacco and alcohol in terms of our perception is that there's a complete ban on the marketing of the advertising of tobacco and cigarettes. We don't have that remotely for alcohol. So we absorb an awful lot of positive messages about alcohol from the huge level of marketing that we see. And that's both in direct advertisements on the TV, the radio, publications, in your hand when you're on your phone, or when you go to, you know, rugby matches or football that's been sponsored by alcohol. Message all the time that it's a risk-free thing to do, that there's no problem with it, it's all happy campaigns, it's grand. And there's that very close association between health giving things like sport, family orientation things like being with friends and family and the good feelings that come with that, and then that making that association with alcohol at the same time. But I think if we were to ban alcohol advertising, strip out of it all the myths that we have at the moment, you would see the product and, you know, for what it actually is, in the same way as you're able to see that for tobacco. So tobacco back in the 1970s, about 50% of the population would have been smoking. That's down now to about 18% of the population. And again, you're not talking about prohibition. You're not saying that people can't do it. You're just making sure that people have the proper information and that the proper controls around pricing, its availability and its marketing are actually in place from a public health perspective. We're a very, very long way off actually having something similar for alcohol. But increasingly, that's what we really need to be doing.
One of the interesting developments in recent years has been the growth in zero alcohol beers. And I find I will often, as my choice, well, obviously if I'm driving, it is my choice, but as my choice, I will go for the zero beer, and they've improved in terms of taste immensely, in my opinion, and obviously the opinion of others, because they're taking a bigger and bigger share of the market. Now, you have some concerns about that, because you fear that still when people look at the branding and when people look at the bottles and when people look at, and now you'll find more and more the sport is, it's being sponsored by a beer brand, but it's the zero version of the beer. But you still believe people are looking at the brand name rather than necessarily the zero that's directly under it.
Yeah, I think that's actually very, very clear that alcohol companies are using these products to actually get around the very modest restrictions that there are on alcohol advertising at the moment. You know, just going back to the sport one, in that Public Health Alcohol Act, the original proposal was that there should be a complete ban on alcohol sports marketing. And what it actually came down to, what it was whittled down to, was that you couldn't advertise on the field of play. So you could sponsor it. You could have your Guinness Six Nations. You could have hoardings all around the stadium, you know, saying Guinness. But on the grass, you couldn't advertise the product. So what we see instead is Guinness 00 at that particular point, and Guinness everywhere else. So you get this very seamless blend between, you know, Guinness and Guinness 00. Mm-hmm. But overwhelmingly, what you're actually seeing is the brand name. And it is interesting. And I do see that, you know, there has been an increase in, the amount of these products that are out there, but they're still a very small proportion of the overall market. So last year, and this would be figures from the drinks industry themselves, zero alcohol products made up about 1.5% of the market. But in that outdoor space where there are restrictions on alcohol advertising, like close to schools or on the field of play, things like that, the advertising there makes up 25% of the alcohol brand spend. So I think it's very clear what the industry are actually doing here is that they're using these products as a means of getting around. Now, if people want to drink them, absolutely, I have no problem at all with that. But I think we should be very cognizant that they are no ordinary product like their alcohol product. So, for example, they're not suitable for under 18s. They're not suitable for people in recovery, you know, who would see them as actually their means of, there's a risk there that they push you towards, you know, going back to alcohol. So they're certainly not a sparkling mineral water is what I'm saying. And I think that needs to be very clear. And when it comes to restrictions in alcohol advertising, what needs to be restricted is an alcohol brand, the branding of it.
Cora says alcohol is a dangerous drug. It has a habit of creeping up on you and grabs a hold of you before you know it. Before you know it, you're in a serious trouble. I've lost two siblings due to alcohol and there was nothing we could do as a family. And I suppose that's the sort of message you get quite a lot.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the level of alcohol harm in this country is devastating. About 20% of the population, 20% of those who drink would have an alcohol use disorder. So that's actually across the whole of the population. That's about 600,000 people. About 90,000 would have a severe alcohol use disorder. Four people die every day from alcohol. You know, four people every single day. You know, we talk about deaths on the road and we're rightly very exercised about that. And indeed, alcohol has a role there as well. But four people actually dying today and another four dying tomorrow. And somehow we put blinkers on around that. But there's no blinkers on for the people who are directly affected by that. And there's absolute devastation. You know, you think of the friends, the family, the children, the parents, everybody who's affected there. And I will say, you know, people don't have to die for their lives to be hugely impacted by alcohol. I'm thinking here particularly of children who are growing up in homes that have been impacted by alcohol. So about 200,000 children, about one in six, would be living in a home that's impacted by a parent whose parents drinking. And that, you know, that stays, that trauma, that, you know, that goes with that, stays with people. It can last a lifetime. There was a recent survey actually done from Maynooth University, which found that a quarter of the adult population had grown up with this particular adverse childhood experience of experiencing alcohol harm in the home. And it has all sorts of impacts. You know, there's a destabilization effect. You know, it actually literally affects the way the brain develops. Where you're unsure of the ground on your feet. You're never sure from day to day, maybe hour by hour, what sort of parent is actually going to be there. Is it the kind, loving parent? Is it the absent parent? Is it the scary, angry, you know, parent as well? So there are many, many different aspects, you know, to alcohol harm that impact literally hundreds of thousands of people in this country. And, you know, if you were to look at it purely on a cost basis, it costs about 12 billion annually to Ireland. It's about 2.5% of GDP. Massive cost, absolutely enormous cost. And yet somehow we're enthralled to this product, or should I say we're enthralled to the industries, you know, who push the product.
Quarter says people will start making poutine again if it gets too expensive, but you obviously do want to see minimum pricing brought in as a key part of what you're saying. We're at a point at the moment where it's a lot cheaper to buy beer in supermarkets and off licences than it is to buy them in pubs. Now, given that one of the arguments for the development of pubs back in the day was that it provided a safe place in which people could have drinks and it would be regulated and it would be controlled, it seems that people are now being driven almost out of the pubs and back into their homes because it's cheaper to buy it in a supermarket or in an off licence and have the drink at home. I mean, is that a contradiction that you're cognizant of? And is that something you'd like to see addressed? Because the argument is, if you're in the pub, at least there's perhaps some control.
We certainly see that, you know, home drinking is particularly risky. Exactly as you were going back to, there are two elements to it. There's, you know, the price, the fact that it's much cheaper to be got in the supermarket, but there's also the thing about the amount that you drink, you know, that you pour so much more, you know, there that there isn't that control that you would have within a pub. Actually, the price of alcohol that you would get in a supermarket today is literally the same as what it was 20 years ago. There was a survey, there was a study actually done with Sheffield University, which published last year, which looked at that. And it's really quite incredible. So even though we have minimum unit pricing, which is a really good thing, when it was introduced back in 2022, it only brought prices back up to where they were 20 years ago. So, you know, that in terms of affordability, that means that alcohol is much, much more affordable today than it was at the turn of the century. It's actually 70% more affordable now. So one of the things that we would be calling for is a levy on the alcohol industry. You know, again, when you just point to that level of harm, 12 billion annually, that needs to be paid for, you know, and I think there's certainly a case to be made to increase excise duties or to put some type of levy on it. And I think particularly to keep targeting the very cheap supermarket alcohol. Again, if you make the comparison with, you know, cigarettes, over the last 10 years, there's consistently been an increase in excise duties applied to cigarettes. It's gone up every single year. Whereas in the last 10 years, there has been no change in excise duties on alcohol. And we really would be questioning why, for a product that causes so much harm, that literally costs the state so much harm, that devastates families, why aren't we, you know, taking a proactive look at this and saying, actually, excise duties should be increased every year in line with inflation, and a similar approach with minimum unit pricing. It needs to be increased in line with inflation annually. Otherwise, it just loses its value and you're back to square one again.
Dr. Sheila Gilheeny, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It is Men's Health Week, and the message from Alcohol Action Ireland in conjunction with Men's Health Week is to know your numbers, look at your alcohol intake, and try and limit it to the recommendation that you take no more than 17 units a week and have gaps between drinking days as well. For the moment, Doctor, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the Local Enterprise Office team to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
And you're very welcome back to the 9th Noon Show on Highland Radio. We're joined in studio by Chris Ashmore for Business Matters. Chris, say very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Great to see you. Chris, a number of things to get through on the programme this morning, and a bit later on we'll be discussing the broadcast that's going out on Sunday, and it's one that's been waiting a while to go out for various reasons, GAA matches, elections and so on. So we'll get to that in a few moments. But beginning with the business news, and the Donegal Women in Business Network hosting an event in the coming days.
Yes, the event is called Spirits and Solstice, Empowering Women in Business, and it's going to take place at Oakfield Park in Raphoe next Thursday from 7 o'clock. The guest speaker will be Laura Bonner, founder of the Muff Liquor Company, and the MC for the evening will be the journalist and author Cathy Donaghy. And it's free to members. If you're not a member, you can contact the Donegal Women in Business Network. Lovely setting for a nice evening at this time of year.
Can you just confirm the date of that?
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
No, because I've had huge debates with people about whether next Thursday is the Thursday coming or the Thursday after next. There's big, long debates about that. Yes. So presumably then it'll be the 20th.
Yes.
It'll be the 20th. That's grand. Congratulations to Letterkenny Chamber, a special recognition.
Yeah, just to mention, of course, some people may have heard this already. This was last week, winning a special recognition for excellence award at Chambers Ireland's overall award. So that's great for them. And staying with chamber related matters, nominations now being accepted for the Shop LK Retailer of the Year award, and you'll find details of that on the Chamber Facebook and its other social media platforms. So there'll be big interest in that. And I might as well at this stage, another Chamber-related matter. They have a June event, Sustainability of the Supply Chain. It's taking place on Tuesday, the 25th of June, from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. at the Donegal ETB's Letterkenny Training Centre in Ballyrain. And speakers will include Liz McCarron, Supply Chain Manager at Philips Medisize Ireland, and Joseph Devoris of the ecological fields. He's an ecological field specialist at Very Connect, and there'll be a panel of business leaders there, and people, including people from Donegal Bees, Swan Net, Gundry and Killybegs, yeah. Little Mamas, Galato. So lots happening there.
And obviously sustainability, hugely important as people become more and more environmentally aware, climate aware. You know, to be able to say, yes, this is a sustainable business is going to be more and more of a marketing tool. And let's say it's going to be more than a marketing tool. It's going to be an absolute necessity as we go forward.
Absolutely. And the whole supply chain, you know, this is something that wouldn't have even been on the radar years ago. So an important topic to be developed there.
Moving on to the New Frontiers programme, if anyone wants to apply for phase two, now is the time.
Yeah, the closing date is actually tomorrow, so last chance to get involved in that. It's hosted, the Colab in Letterkenny, also ATU in Sligo for people, and funding, mentor, support. It really is a very good programme for businesses in the early stages of their development. NewFrontiersNW.ie is the website for that.
And if you want to get that form filled in, obviously, it you know, get the skates on, because tomorrow is the yes. closing date. The local enterprise office in Donegal hosting an access to finance information session.
Yeah, this is all about Microfinance Ireland, and we've highlighted this on the programme in the past. Tomorrow they're having an information day. You can register by going to localenterprise.ie to find out more about that. And look, there's a lot of things out there, but you need to equip yourself with the information as to what potentially may apply to you. And speaking of which, there's also a business support clinic taking place this Friday from 10 to 11 o'clock. And that's online via Zoom and through the local enterprise office, and an explanation of the grant aid process. And also you can get some one-to-one business advice and some really good tips there as well.
A lot of emphasis on supporting the Irish language at the moment, not only in Gaelic areas, but in Letterkenny as well, with the Leaner in Letterkenny and other initiatives. And business grants potentially available if business owners want to promote language in their business.
Yes, this was announced earlier on in the year. So if you're a business owner and you have an interest in Irish, there is funding available to promote the Irish language in your business. Now, this can be things like your shop front, your name in Irish, things like that. The deadline is not until the end of October, so plenty of time to find out more about that. Contact your local enterprise office on that one.
Now, we know there is speculation that there could be an election in the autumn, and we have already been told that the budget's going to be brought forward to the first week in October, and Minister Michael McGrath has been dropping hints right, left and centre, and entrepreneurs keep an eye out.
Yes, he's been hinting that it'll be, I suppose you could call it a business-friendly budget, and particular initiatives to help the self-employed and entrepreneurs. And of course, this all comes at a time on a bigger scale. Of course, we've seen the European Central Bank making a rate cut last week from 4% to 3.75%. More rate cuts expected, so that means the cost of borrowing will come down, which will be good for everybody. However, the Central Bank President Christine Lagarde has warned that it could be a bumpy road ahead, so we won't take anything for granted. And still some concerns throughout Europe about inflation. Most countries now it's down to around 2%, but with the ongoing crises that we have in several places, it's still, you know, it's not a clear road ahead. Yeah.
However, there is potentially some very good news in the offing, with speculation about a major European company opening a new facility in Donegal. And you're on the case, and hopefully you'll have a substantial feature on that before too long.
Yeah, limited in what we can say at the moment, but there is a European company looking at Letterkenny with a new business. We will find out more before the end of the month. A million euro investment. It's set to create around 20 jobs. So watch this space, Donal.
And if people want to want the skinny and the latest on that, Business Matters will be the place in which to get it. Right, let's talk about the podcast this week, because it's an interesting one, and I'm going to declare an interest here. The subject of this would be a friend of mine, someone whom I hold in very high regard, not surprisingly, because she's involved in the music business. But it's a podcast that's been lurking around for a while but never quite made it on air yet.
Yes, Zara Montgomery is the person who I have been speaking to in relation to, well, she's a new band, Snapshot Live, set up for catering for weddings and also corporate events. And essentially, this is a one-stop shop for all your wedding music and also looking at the corporate market. So, you know, people may be planning a wedding. There can be the ceremony music. There might be reception. You could have a band at the wedding. There's a DJ later on. She's really brought it all together. Package for everything, saves you time, and a very experienced person in terms of her own background in the music industry. And a little bit unfortunate for her, because we did record this some time ago, but we had the Donegal Armagh game, and there was a shootout there and penalties, so that put it back a little bit. And then the elections, well, the podcast was imminent, Donal, but it, unfortunately, so was the count. And,
and the count got beaten.
But that's on this Sunday. The podcast is already available, and she's got a great response to this new venture already.
And if anyone wants to see Zara in action, I mean, plenty of YouTube videos. She plays with the Seeger Sessions, and if anyone's had a chance to see the Seeger Sessions, she's the one that's sitting down at the keyboard. And if you do get a chance to see the Seeger Sessions, do, because it's just one absolutely mighty, mighty gig. And it's fantastic. So you, if you get that chance, take it. Just chuck that in there. So Zara's will make it on air. So we can say at this stage that there's no major GA matches coming up this weekend. No.
Well, there are major matches, but she's going ahead at 6 o'clock on Sunday.
So
we hope.
There is no match that might go to penalties and actually encroach after six. We understand that.
We understand.
Hopefully,
that,
yes. So yes, all barring anything major happening, that episode will go out on air on Highland Radio on Sunday evening next after the 6 o'clock news. Chris, if anyone wants to get in touch, if they have any more leads on major companies coming to open factories in Donegal or any other business news in the region?
Yes, you can email me on businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chris Ashmore, we'll see you back next week. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donal.
You welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're into the final 17 minutes of the programme. Quite a bit to get through. One or two comments before we move on. There were over 35 pubs in Letterkenny in the 60s and 70s. No one drank in the house, and nobody was the owner of the house they lived in. Older people listening to the radio will know what I am saying. Caller says, can any of your listeners shed some light on why there are no public bins in busy tourist areas like Schlieffeleg? We travelled with extended family and our dog for a day out walking. We bought ice cream and drinks at the cliffs. There wasn't a bin in sight. Lots of other visitors were like ourselves, searching of somewhere to dispose of their water bottles. No bins either for dog poo. I think when they charge heavily for parking, the very least they should do is provide bins. If you go to Glenveagh, they're provided, but none at Schlieffeleg, and it was very busy with visitors from all over the world. Now, I want to go to Zoom, because we are joined on Zoom by Colin Campbell, who has published a book called There Is Always Hope. And that book was born out of some tragic news that Colin's partner received in January of 2020. We're going to go to Colin on Zoom. Colin, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Colin, on the 24th of January, the rest of the world was looking at a developing issue in China and wondering if that was going to start to impact people here. I think Sam McConkey was having his first interviews on this program with Greg at around about that time. However, for you and your partner, Deirdre, your focus was a lot closer to home.
Very much so. You mentioned that date. It was on that day that, with no forewarning, she received a diagnosis of a secondary breast cancer, which had spread also to her lungs and liver. We had no forewarning, so it was a heck of a shock, I can tell you. So the book, our story really is written from my point of view as a partner, and really takes us through that early period of the shock. You know, the fear really following the diagnosis, it wasn't a good story. And the medical appointments following that, and then to where you say, I don't know, where just when we thought perhaps a few weeks in that we might have settled and found ourselves, you know, the world, you know, changed.
Yeah.
And while we were obviously very frightened about what was happening throughout the world, quite frankly, our biggest fear was what effect that would have on the treatment plan, which Gary had just been given.
I mean, how close were you to hospital in terms of, I presume, radiotherapy was needed, chemo was needed, the various treatments needed. How close were you to those facilities?
Well, we're very, very fortunate. We live in Drumahull, which is just a stone's throw away from the Alton and Kelvin Hospital. And at this stage, I'll pay tribute to them. They were superb. The oncologists, doctors, nurses, support staff were excellent. We're very close and very lucky. From the accents I had heard in the wards while I was waiting in the early stages, pre-COVID stages, people were coming from all parts, north and south, mm-hmm. To get there. One guy had travelled 200 miles, you know,
yeah.
And that was remarkable. You know, we were fortunate, yeah.
Through COVID, and I'm sure when you're in that situation where a close person is being treated for cancer, and you're going to be worried about the prognosis, you're going to be worried about the future. I mean, counselling, assistance is very important, having people to talk to, having the chance to actually process what you're going through. I'm sure when you were going through COVID, the focus was going to be on get the treatment, but a lot of those ancillary supports were going to be withdrawn. And maybe even sometimes there were days when what you needed more than anything was to sit down with your mate, have a cup of coffee and talk about something else, but you couldn't.
Very much so. A cup of coffee or something much stronger, I can tell you. We had a great support in the early stages. That support, in a sense, was gone overnight. That was nobody's fault. It was COVID. We were faced with, you know, being on our own, really, you know, and the isolation that comes with that. It was difficult. People wanted to see us. There were some funny stories, like one of the boys came up with his wife to see us. They'd driven about 70 miles to shout in through the window. You know, they couldn't even use the loo in the house. We had people who, tied shopping bags to the front door handle with gifts. And you know, almost counter, but whilst we were on our own, we were overwhelmed by the kindness of our close friends, of acquaintances, and even strangers, you know, who were checking us out through, you know, texts and emails to see what we needed, if we needed anything. And we're very, very taken by that. But for me, in some of my more private moments, I didn't have mates. I could text them, but it wasn't the same. It really wasn't.
Yeah.
And I think it led me, you know, of my generation, I'm programmed in my 60s, programmed to be sort of solve problems, to protect. And I was facing, dilemmas, really saying, am I up to this? Can I do this? What am I meant to be doing? The helplessness was there.
And the question was, who's going to protect you?
Yeah. Well, probably, yeah, you know, because I was sort of put on the brave face, very happy to do so. I was determined from day one that we were going to win. And, you know, the nature of Deirdre's condition is that there is no cure, you know. It's a lifetime of continuing treatments. But from day one, we said, well, we'll accept that if we can, you know. So, yeah, there was a lot for me to reevaluate in terms of my own sense of my self-worth, whether I could do this. But yet a determination to revise my own thoughts to say, let's not dwell on things, but let's just get on with it. Every day's a bonus, and it's up to me to try and get us through it. But it was difficult, yeah.
We're almost 4.5 years down the line at this point. I mean, the first question is, how is Deirdre now? And the second question is, how are you?
Question number one, Deirdre is super. Thank you for asking, because sometimes I forget to mention that. She has had a very successful series of treatments. You mentioned radiography. She had six chemos, and then what regular now we have biologicals, as they're called. Don't ask me to explain the detail, but they're working. She's in remission, and it's as I said, there's no cure, but this is as good as it gets, and we're very, very happy with that. You know, she's now a grandmother, an excellent one, and she's plenty to do, you know. From my point of view, I feel writing this story in one way was therapeutic. It was also a big challenge. But I feel that somehow, and so, an important thing is sometimes you do not know, you can't plan it, but somehow we got through. I'm delighted about that. I'm very pleased. Very pleased, yeah.
you call the book There Is Always Hope. I mean, the book, I'm sure, could also have been called Why Us. It could have been called Oh Bloody Hell. It could have had many titles. The fact that you've called it There Is Always Hope suggests that there is a positivity perhaps running through it that says, look, no matter how bad things got, we persevered, we got through. And that is an important message to get out there.
I think that while the book, from my point of view, is very personal, it deals with two universal topics. One's cancer diagnosis and the other is obviously the worldwide experience of as yet unquantifiable effects of COVID on us all. Those are two. Why is there always, for me, the one currency we had was hope. And within 3 days, our second appointment, I asked the oncologist, do we have hope here? He said, yes. I said, we're going to grasp that. So the currency was hope and the title then kind of wrote itself. All of those other titles did come to mind, yes. But the most positive thing for us and the message I want to get to others is no matter how bad it looks, there's always hope.
Colin, that is a great point to end this on. The book is There Is Always Hope. It's available, as they say, in all good bookshops. I'm sure it's available online as well through Amazon and the various online platforms. Colin Campbell, look, all the best to Deirdre and to yourself. Thank and you. Let people read this book and let people be inspired by this book. And as the title suggests, let people take hope from it.
I hope so. Just one last point to mention. The proceeds will be donated to the Make Seconds Count charity. Who were so helpful and continue to be to Deirdre, and I just wanted to pay tribute to them also.
Thank you
very much.
Colin, thank you very much indeed. All the best to you and Deirdre. Yes. And that's almost the 9 till noon show for now. We're going to take just a closing few of your comments before we go. Caller says, I'm hearing secondhand that in Australia, when you buy petrol or diesel at a filling station, the price of car insurance and vehicle and road taxes are factored into the price paid at the pump. You don't need to buy individual insurance and pay separate taxes on your own. Would that not be a much better system than the current Irish system, which deals with uninsured motorists? Be much more efficient than the current profit-making businesses for the insurance companies and would eliminate the state bureaucracies and trivial court cases. Now, I know that is a system that's used in many places with regards to road taxes, and that instead of having a tax and a tax disc, the road tax is factored into the price of petrol. Whether you can do that with insurance is another question. I'm not sure that's the case. I'm not sure that would work. I know the feeling is that why should I pay road tax at whatever the rate is when I drive 10,000 kilometres a year and a person that drives 100 kilometres pays exactly the same. That's the raison d'etre for doing it with the fuel in terms of the road tax. Insurance, I'm not sure works that way, but I am open to correction. Comment online from Patrick. Patrick says homeless figures up, cost of living up, immigration, neutrality, overcrowding in emergency departments and the establishment parties topped the poll. Why? Because over 50% of people didn't vote. Fair point, Patrick, that the turnout was roughly in around about the 50% mark in most areas. And if the turnout is 50%, that means 50% of people are not casting their vote and are not using their vote. It is a very fair point. Caller says, I'm waiting over 4 years for an appointment with dermatology. I keep getting letters asking if I still want an appointment. Every letter is returned to the HSE waiting list stating yes. And that is a common thing that they send out letters, and maybe that's one of the ways they're getting the waiting lists down, is trying to, because they reckon there are people on waiting lists that don't need to be on the waiting lists. So if they can get those people off the list, then that is going to make it easier for people who actually do need the treatment to get the treatment. Caller says, why don't the HSE do a temporary purchase card, similar to a credit card, with a set amount for that procedure? That's a novel way of potentially looking at the cross-border treatment or the treatment in private hospitals. Caller says, good interview with the Ombudsman, clear examples and clear questions with examples of the difficulties people are facing, and good to see the Ombudsman has a common sense approach. And a caller has asked me, and this will be the final comment of the morning, would you give a mention of a talk by historian Dr. Joe Kelly? He's travelling over the tracks of time, delivering a talk on the history of the Donegal Railways tonight at Connell Parish Church in Letterkenny. That's the venue, and that's from Paul. Happy to do so. Dr. Joe Kelly, always an interesting man to speak to, and his history of the railways will, I've no doubt, be an engaging one. John Breslin is up around the northwest. Thanks to everyone who contributed to the show this morning. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Shannon and Caroline for all their assistance. For myself, Donal Kavanagh, Greg's back tomorrow. But for me, have a very good day.